All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Now, as promised, we are shifting our focus for the second half of this show to the energy sector. Oil and gas commentary from our good friend Dan Steffens, president of the Energy Prospectus Group. Dan, let's start with oil, because boy, oh boy, it was a very short-term breakdown that oil had in the month of March. In the middle of March, oil dropped as low as about $64 a barrel, but then has gone almost straight up in the second half of March and is continuing to move higher in April, now over $83 a barrel. That $81 a barrel level was a pretty stiff resistance throughout this year. Now, a lot of this move, at least recently, really got going on the surprise cut by OPEC when they cut production by a million barrels per day. And they announced that on a Sunday night too, ahead of their meeting, caught the markets offside, got things moving. Dan, let's dive into that decision a little bit more. What happened there? Give us some insights, please.
Well, I was on a conference call the other day with some guys that really know the global oil market here. They probably handle the hedging business for half of the upstream companies. And anyway, they gave five reasons. And first of all, they are going, Saudi Arabia is going to defend $85 Brent. They need that level of oil price in order to balance their budget. And, you know, they don't have the ability to just keep printing more money like we do. And oil is their number one revenue stream. So they are going to protect $85 oil. So now you can set that as your new floor. So that means WTI is, you know, 80, 81 would be a new floor. The other thing is, I think they announced it on a Sunday when the markets were closed. I think they wanted to crush the guys that were selling oil futures short. They wanted to, and they did it. I can tell you that a bunch of these hedge funds that were heavily into shorting oil futures contracts got freaking hammered when they showed up to the office on that Monday. And they had probably margin calls waiting for them. So that's why you got about a $5, $6 price increase in the first half of the day on the Monday following that announcement. Now, but the real thing is, everybody, all the analysts, Goldman Sachs, Raymond James, everybody, they were all expecting us to be the global oil market to be short of supply by the fourth quarter. Now, what OPEC has done, they've pushed that up to May 1st. Starting May, that's when these really cuts go into effect. And this is a real cut. This is a real production cut. When they took that quote to lowered their quotas by 2 million barrels a day, all they were doing was really, for most of that, was just an adjustment to the quotas, because two-thirds of the OPEC countries could not meet their old quotas. So they just brought it back to what they were capable of making. That maybe took 500,000 barrels of Saudi oil, maybe UAE, a little bit Kuwait, a little bit. But most of that just adjusted it. Now, this 1.6 million barrel a day cut is really going to take that much supply off the market. Now, probably 500,000 barrels a day is going to be just what Russia was already announcing they were going to do. And then 500,000 barrels a day out of Saudi Arabia. And the rest was, spread to the other Persian Gulf guys. Now, think about this. If you made anything, and by selling less of it, you could actually make more money, wouldn't you do that? And I think another reason, because they're getting just as much revenue, but they're selling less oil. I mean, why not do that? Just keep your assets in the ground. The other thing, they wanted to send a clear message to President Biden. He basically promised them he was going to refill the SPR, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, when oil got down into the low 70s. And then they just came out and said, no, they weren't going to do it. Well, they just, changed the rules. And so, Saudi Arabia, which isn't a real fan of Team Biden anyway, they just decided, heck with you. I mean, this is just like, they're flipping the guy off. Tom, we're not going to play that. You're going to play by our rules. And here's the new rule. We're in charge of oil prices. You aren't. I don't see this going anywhere but up. and I see $85 very soon. I see $100 by the end of the year. Raymond James officially raised their fourth quarter forecast to $105 a barrel. They have $95 a barrel for the third quarter. That's their official oil price forecast now.
Well, Dan, it sounds like an overall very bullish setup for the oil sector, and you know, a lot of analysts looking at triple digit. But I'm going to throw just a wild card at you here on the other side of it, just to take the other side of the discussion. And I did see an article out today that the EIA expects an oil surplus despite these OPEC plus cuts, and that they're saying that global oil production is expected to increase by 1.5 million barrels per day in 2023. So even with these cuts that OPEC's doing, they still see a build. Could that in any way throw off these higher price forecasts?
Is that EIA or IEA?
EIA.
Okay, so that's the U.S. Department of Energy. Guess who signs their paychecks? You have to play that game. You got to remember where the pay comes from. And Department of Energy is based in Washington, D.C., and the guys in charge of Washington, D.C. do not want higher gasoline prices. So just remember that when you read the reports. IEA also has a little bit of that tilt. They're, you have to, sign in blood that you believe in global warming to work at the IEA. But I think their March report was very tight. They were forecasting demand to reach 104 million barrels a day. Well, that's like 3 million barrels a day over what we're producing now, or what the global production is now. Where's that 3 million barrels a day coming in? I'll tell you, it's not coming from the U.S. U.S. production is kind of flatlined here. A lot of our production growth in 2022 came from the completion of DUC wells. We had some really good wells in the DUC inventory. DUC is drilled but uncompleted wells. These wells were drilled when the oil price was real low. They just cased them. They, put casing into them all the way to the end and just let it sit there. But they didn't perforate those wells. Well, then when the oil price got up to 80, 90 or whatever, they went and completed a bunch of those wells, and that got our production up. But our production peaked in November of 2019 at 12.9 million barrels per day of crude oil. And that's black oil, crude oil. And it went all the way down, below 10 for a while. But it's back to like 12.2, 12.3. I don't see it getting back to 12.9 anytime soon. The Bakken is pretty much on decline. The Eagle Ford oil is on decline. Permian Basin's got upside. Powder River Basin in Wyoming, a little bit of upside in DJ Basin in Colorado, but very little, maybe a couple hundred thousand barrels a day more. But there's nothing big on the horizon that's going to shoot U.S. production up to like 14,000 barrels a day or anything like that.
All right. So, Dan, overall bullish, right? With the forecast of oil prices continuing to rise here. What about natural gas? Where is natural gas going to find a bottom? Because it is a little off of its bottom, but it was just under $2.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of the opposite of what happened in the futures market. When you see a big drop like we've had from $6 in the fourth quarter to $2 or whatever, that's because the hedge funds got over long. We started the winter by mid-December. We were 200 or 300 BCF below the five-year average in storage. We had a cold couple weeks in December, and the hedge funds went very long on long contracts. Well, it's not as big of a market. The global oil market is heavily traded. It's, next to gold, maybe the heaviest traded commodity on the earth. It is, not maybe, but natural gas is a much smaller market. So the real buyers of the natural gas are the utilities that bring gas to your house or use it to generate electricity. And then the guys that make plastics or industrial users that either use it for fuel at their factory or else use those molecules to make something else. So that went down. NGLs, there's a surplus of propane now. It's gone down. Yeah, so the gases are at the other end of the spectrum. But those market forces will rebalance that. And we do not have a glut. We have maybe a 200, 250 BCF above in storage, what we usually have at the end of the winter. But we're, storage is only 30 or 40% full. I mean, our storage capacity is like 4,500 BCF, billion cubic feet, and there's about 1,800 BCF in there. So there's a lot of storage capacity. It's not like they're not going to start flaring it or anything. Right now we're blessed to have so much gas, but the long-term outlook for gas is extremely bullish. because starting in about 18 months, when we get to the fourth quarter of 2024, you're going to see a big ramp up in our export capacity, because there's like a dozen LNG export facilities that are back to back to back going to be coming online at the end of 2024 and 25.
Well, Dan, in light of that, are you, when you look at the companies, I mean, a lot of companies are hybrid. They have a mix of, you know, oil, natural gas, liquids. There's also some companies that are pure gassers or some that are more oily names. But oil has bounced nicely, as we just noted, and, you know, there's some good price action there for the companies. But with natural gas, as a contrarian, and with all those LNG plants slated to come on over the next couple of years, would you be looking to pick off companies that are gassers when they're unloved and with all that fundamental growth, or how would you look at it?
Yeah, and the way I look at it, remember, these companies survived like a long period of $2 gas. You know, prior to it running up last year, it was in the $2 to $3 range for a long time, like about 6 or 7 years. We are blessed to have massive natural gas reserves in this country. And if we were smart, we would be using more natural gas for transportation. Forget this EV push. It's never going to do anything to really take down oil demand. If you wanted to take down oil demand, you would mandate, so let's say that half of the big truck, you know, the 18 wheelers on the highway would have to start running on compressed natural gas. That technology has been well known for a long time. There's cars that run on natural gas. There's, you know, there's taxis all over in big cities that run on propane. So it's got high octane. The engines run cleaner and last longer. And the only thing is, we don't have the delivery system. So you would need to put a bunch of compressed natural gas stations all over the country first. So that's the argument you get from the trucking companies. But as cheap as it is from an energy standpoint, it would be really lower the fuel cost of these trucking companies. So that would be a way to go. That's another reason I think the long-term potential for natural gas is really there. But they're being okay. They're going to adjust. I follow EQT. They're the largest gas producer in the country. Antero Resources, their symbols AR. Range Resources actually looks very good, because it gets, it was about 30% liquid production. So they're considered a major gas producer in the Marcellus and Utica, but they all also produce a lot of liquids. So they're going to be fine. And they had quite a bit of their production hedged anyway. And actually, EQT had quite a bit of their production hedged at like $4 heading into this year.
So, Dan, what are some of your favorite stocks then? Because, look, these energy stocks, they have recovered. That they were already in good position financially after that last run. Where are you focusing? Give us some insights on companies you like, please.
Well, I know you got a lot of listeners up in Canada. I spent the last couple of days, we had Surge Energy down here today hosting a luncheon for it. So I was looking at InPlay, Hemisphere, Crescent Point. I looked at Baytex, announced a big acquisition. Those companies look good. I would put Baytex at the bottom of that list, because they're taking on a lot of debt to buy this company, Ranger. They're buying an Eagleford company that I really, really liked. I mean, I liked the deal, but they're taking on quite a bit of debt to do that. But Surge looks very good, pays a nice dividend. InPay plays a nice dividend. That's the way to go. I like the royalty companies. I think that I follow two royalty companies that are very leveraged to oil, have more oil production. That's Sito, S-I-T-I-O. I don't think I pronounced it. S-T-R is a symbol. They're going to announce a big increase in production because they closed the merger with another one called Brigham Royalties or Brigham Minerals. They closed. So they're going to almost double their production from fourth quarter to first quarter. And then I like Venom, V-N-O-M. It's called Viper Energy Partners. It is a partnership, but they've elected to be taxed as a C Corp. So it's not an MLP. It's just a regular C Corp for tax purposes. So I like those two a lot.
Well, Dan, what about on the growth side of things, as far as companies you see have a bigger than average growth wedge and can really expand, where a lot of companies are kind of coasting with what they got? Are there any on the growth side that really have your attention?
Yeah, Surge has got 20% growth, year-over-year growth locked in. They were 20.5 growth last year, and they are look like they're locked in at about 23% year-over-year production growth this year based on their recent acquisition and a pretty aggressive drilling program. They're going to drill about 70 or 80 wells this year. And they got some pretty good stuff and a lot of running room. I really like a company called Earthstone. I think you're going to get the CEO on one of your shows here pretty soon. They're based down here in Houston, and I've known the management team for a decade. Good guys. They really know their stuff. They've never disappointed me from the standpoint of if they tell me they're going to do something, they do it. And they're up to like 104,000 barrels a day of production. It's a good one. I don't think they pay a dividend yet, but I think they are going to start paying dividends.
What about dividend stocks then? Get into some of the dividend stocks that you like, that you think are, well, just quite frankly, some of the better ones, because there's a lot of dividends to be gained right now through the energy sector.
Yeah, I like those royalty companies. Now, the upstream companies that I have in our high yield income portfolio, Coterra, they're more leveraged to natural gas. So right now, I'd put them at the bottom of the list. Their CTRA is a symbol, but you know, long term, they're very good and they have a super, super strong balance sheet. Pioneer, there's a rumor that Exxon's going to buy Pioneer. It pays a nice variable dividend to get Pioneer, because Pioneer does not need any money. They are a money cash flow machine and pay out about a 9 or 10% dividend yield now. But if it gets into a bidding war for Pioneer, we're talking like a $60 or $70 billion price tag. It'd be one of the biggest mergers ever. And so I think the two candidates for that one are ExxonMobil or Chevron, I've heard, is rumored to be interested in it also. And you know, the management team, like the CEO is 70 years old. Maybe it's just time to cash out or something. I don't know. I like Diamondback a lot. Their symbol is FANG, F-A-N-G. It's a strong growth company and a strong dividend payer. So that's a good one. And I like them. And there's a few midstream companies. The midstream companies are the safest bet. If you're just investing for dividend yield, look at some of the real high quality midstream companies. I happen to like Plains, All American, trades as a C Corp and as a MLP. The MLP is PAA. And the C Corp is PAGP, and they both pay identical dividends, and the dividend yield is like 8-9%.
Well, Dan, another thing that investors look at when they look at the oil and gas space is different plays, like different fields, different basins, offshore versus onshore. Any that stand out to you as worth the candle?
Well, I mean, the Eagle Ford, this is from EIA itself, the Eagle Ford and the Bakken up in North Dakota have probably both passed their peak of production. They would have to have a significant increase in drilling activity to just get back to their previous peak. But that does not mean that there's not really good companies in those plays. And I like the Eagle Ford a little bit better. I think they got better market access. See, they don't have the pipeline constraints that are in the Permian. The Eagle Ford is in South Texas. It's closer to the coast. It's got access for its gas to those big LNG export facilities along the Gulf Coast. It also has a very adequate pipeline takeaway capacity into the Houston and Gulf Coast refinery. So no problem. In fact, they kind of get a premium for their oil compared to the Permian companies. And in that one, there's one small cap that I really, really like. In fact, I value it at triple where it's currently trading. It's called Silver Bow. It's a small cap, doesn't pay a dividend or anything, but it's got some nice numbers, and I think they're going to generate a real strong first quarter report. That symbol is SBOW, Silver Bow.
All right, Dan, we'll wrap it up here, man. Always great information, especially when it comes to the companies. You follow a wide range of companies and separate them for your subscribers in these different categories that I find very valuable. So investors can really select what kind of stocks they are looking for. We'll chat next month, Dan. But again, it was great having you on the show. I look forward to chatting with you soon. Everybody, thank you for tuning in on this weekend show. Remember to go back through our website and podcast, listen to all those interviews throughout the week and those company updates. And as always, keep in touch with Shad and I through email. Hope you all have a great rest of your weekend. Dan, thanks again for joining us this weekend.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.